Well, I was looking at our texts, and the one that I gravitated to in the Lenten season, this should come as no surprise to anyone, is actually what Paul writes in Corinthians. And it's a fascinating passage overall, but there's one part that I especially like, and it's one that I have struggled to understand over the years, and I'm not here to say that I understand all of it by any means, but it's found in the middle of our reading. Verse 22, Jews demand miraculous signs and Greeks look for wisdom. And then it goes on, but I've been thinking about that. And Paul, of course, is writing in a particular context and he's writing to a particular group of people. But the religiosity that demands signs is not limited to the Jews by any means. And there's a great stream of religiosity, both in the Judeo-Christian tradition and various denominations and outside it as well, that's looking for miraculous signs. And I think it's fascinating that Paul talks about this and says that this is what Jews are looking for in the context of our other readings today, where Jesus specifically addresses a desire for miraculous signs. And our Old Testament lesson is perhaps the ultimate of miraculous signs. The Israelites wanted a sign that God was with them. They wanted this law. We talked about this last week, how they wanted law because law makes things easier, and they got one. God himself wrote out the laws, the 10 words, the 10 commandments, and that still wasn't enough. We ended up with laws upon laws on top of that. And so if the Jews are looking for a miraculous sign, if people of that particular religious strain are looking for a miraculous sign, if God giving you laws on rocks that you can read, if you want more than that, I'm not quite sure what he can do. And I suspect that the desire for miraculous signs is much like the desire we have as younger people when we're asked what we want for supper, and what it comes down to is we want something else. Your parents run through everything in the house and some things they're even willing to go out and get, and you think, no, I think I want something else. And the desire for a miraculous sign is much the same. You're looking for something else, something more miraculous than the last. Well, if that's one side of what people are looking for, then the other side is what Paul characterizes as what the Greeks are looking for, which is wisdom. And this isn't limited to Greeks. Not even limited to non-religious people. And wisdom in this case, I don't think I'm doing violence to the text, is we're looking for human ability, human cleverness, human experience and talent to solve the problems that we have. Because the Jews didn't want miraculous signs just because they were bored. They wanted miraculous signs so they would know what to do and so the world would make sense. And the Greeks in this case, and we might want to think of it as a secular mind, not limited to those who don't attend church, because I know perfectly well that you can sit in church and have a secular mind, or those of us who are believers can have parts of us that are sort of secular, this is how we think, however it might be. We're looking for the things that human beings can do to bring meaning to our world, to explain what needs to be done, and how to do it, to how to live well. Well, we all want that. We want to live well. We want to do what's right. I'm not terribly old, but I'm old enough, and just the experience I've had, I've met an unusual number of people just because of some of the jobs I've had. And you know, I've never met anyone, with one possible exception, who wanted to do wrong. When people do wrong things, it's because they're doing what they think is right. It's just the rest of the world is incorrect, according to them. We want to know this. And Paul doesn't say that wanting to know these things is wrong, but what he says in verse 23, "But we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and foolishness to Gentiles. But to those whom God has called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God." In the face of a religious, well-meant, sincere, and authentic desire for miraculous signs on the one hand, and a deep concern for the human race and the world in which we live on the other. Paul says, what matters is Christ crucified. A stumbling block to the Jews and foolishness to the Greeks. When we think of a stumbling block, we tend to think of something fairly small, a rock in your way. I think a stumbling block in this case might be better. Think of the pew you're in. Imagine walking into that if you weren't expecting it to be there. This isn't a stumbling block in the sense that it's one of those things where you lose your rhythm of walking and stumble for a little bit. This is something that knocks you flat. Because the Jews were waiting for Messiah. And the Jews have said, this is what Messiah looks like. This is the ultimate solution to the problem of the world. It's a Messiah who will come and who will bring justice in a way that is really obvious and really painful to all those people that have been hard on us. And everybody will know. Messiah will be a geopolitical king like David, only better. Bigger. He's going to do for these Romans what we've always wanted done for them. And all the rest of it. And Jesus died. That's not what a Messiah does. If your Messiah is somebody who's going to ascend to a throne of some sort and command what needs to be done, that doesn't make any sense. Stumbling block seems the least way to describe it. And for the Greeks, for Gentiles, for people who are looking at how do we solve the world's problems, we solve the world's problems by getting in there and doing stuff with them. I don't die. What does that do? What kind of wisdom is produced by somebody dying? You see the problem. And the problem isn't that Jesus was wrong. The problem is that we don't understand the actual solution. We want solutions, and that's a good part of this whole thing. We want solutions, but we don't know where to go to find them. And so we go to what we think will work. We go to this idea of a Messiah in the form of a king. Or for us Gentiles, we go to this idea of human beings fixing stuff. Because we fix lots of stuff. I'm planning on going to a walk-in clinic if I can find one on the way home. And if they tell me I have pneumonia again, they'll give me some stuff that'll fix it. And I'm pretty happy about that. It's amazing. We're good at that stuff. But does that solve the ultimate problem? No. Because the ultimate problem, whether we address it this way or not, is the alienation that we have between us and a holy God. That we can never be fully at home with who we are until we're at home with God. And the problem with the holiness of God is that it's fundamentally removed from us. God's holiness is something that is unattainable to us. We could live a perfect life and we still wouldn't have achieved God's holiness. So how do we bridge that gap? Well, we don't. Jesus does. Jesus bridged that gap. When Jesus was on the cross, it wasn't just a human being dying for something he didn't do. It wasn't just an injustice. When Jesus was on the cross, what he did is he took upon himself all the sin that had ever been done, that was being done, and ever would be done. He took it all upon himself. So in one particular sense, it's not on us anymore. When God looks at us, at those of us who are in a relationship with him through Jesus, and when God's holiness looks at us and says, I can't be around anything that isn't as holy as me, what God sees is Jesus. And he sees his holiness, not our sin. Because Jesus took it on and took care of it. It's gone. When God looks at us to judge us for being unholy, sinful people, when we have moved into that relationship with him through Jesus, he doesn't see that sin because he's taken that sin and he's sent it away as far as the east is from the west. So I especially like a bit of a paradox perhaps, but it certainly gets the point across, doesn't it? It's gone. And that's what the cross does. It's a stumbling block to people who want miraculous signs, who want lightning bolts. For people who will only believe when they see magic happen. And it's foolishness to people who say that we have to be able to logic this out. We have to be able to figure it out. We have to be able to replicate the experiment, at least in theory. It's foolishness. But it's truth. That's the best part about it. Because both what the religious, that desire that religion has for miraculous signs never does it. And the wisdom that we're looking for still doesn't accomplish. Why do good people do bad things and why do bad people do good things? Jesus solves those for us. In the scandal of the cross, as it's sometimes called, because it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense to us, but that's not because we're right and it's wrong. It's because we're limited and it's not. We look at this stumbling block. The Jews wanted a Messiah. They wanted miraculous signs. And Jesus said, no, you don't get either one of those, at least not as you're expecting them. He said, if I wanted to, you could destroy this temple that you've been working on for 46 years and won't finish for another 20, destroy it, and I'll rebuild it in 3 days. And that still wouldn't be enough. And he wasn't talking about that anyway. He's talking about himself. Because they'd missed the point again. Just like we often do. But I like how this passage ends. For the foolishness of God is wiser than human wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than human strength. And we look at that and we think if that was in another religious tradition, it would be a koan or a koan, however you pronounce that. It would be one of those paradoxes that gives us something to think about. Except it's not a paradox. In this case, it's a description of God. God is so much wiser than we are that if we want to look at it in those terms, when he's foolish, which I don't really think he is, he's still wiser than we are. And if we want miracles and if we want miraculous signs and we want magic and all that sort of thing, all that we can imagine and all that we can do is still inferior to the least of what God can do. And if we're looking for those, we need to look no further than the cross. Because the cross is where he demonstrated this. That the way to reconciliation with God, the way to peace with ourselves and peace with those around us, doesn't come from the laws that a geopolitical king will provide, and it doesn't come from our own ethical and scientific constructions. It comes from a relationship with God through Jesus that remakes us from the inside out into the people we were created to be. And that doesn't make any sense to someone who's so wrapped up in miraculous signs that that's all they see. And it doesn't make any sense to people who say that, no, human beings are the measure of everything that matters. And if we can't do it, it doesn't exist. In this Lenten season, as we're moving our way closer and closer to Easter, I pray that this text, that these ideas will inform the rest of your Lent so that Easter can be better than it's ever been before. That we can think about those times when we want God to intercede miraculously for us for good reasons or ill, when we wish we were smarter. That we can remember that in the cross, everything that is of ultimate value was accomplished. And that through the relationship with that Christ, we receive everything we need. Foolishness to some, a scandal to others. But the truth of God, who sent his Son to this world, not that we might be condemned through anything he did, but that we might be saved through his actions, that ended with him on a cross. Risen again, to be sure. But you can't have one without the other. And the miracle of the crucifixion still holds true. Lent is a time that we spend some perhaps extra time pondering this, and perhaps this will guide your thoughts for this week. That wisdom, desire for religion, they're good things. But what we really need is Jesus. Amen.